quorum present, I will call us to order and ask that we stand and join in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Welcome. We have an ambitious agenda this evening, and I have complete confidence in our collective energy and ability to plow through that very ambitious agenda, starting with supervisor conference reports. Look at that. No supervisor conference reports? Seeing none, Administrator O'Malley.
A proclamation, December 2011, Zoning Planning and Land Information Month. What a surprise for the kind of agenda we have this evening. And Metropolitan Transportation Planning Month, whereas the staff of these departments assist and advise individuals, businesses, professionals, and governmental communities by uniformly administering the zoning, floodplain, shoreland, subdivision, telecommunication, non-metallic mining ordinances, and consistently carrying out the provisions of the comprehensive land use ordinances, and whereas they coordinate land information systems for the assessment, taxation, mapping, building permits, planning, and the educational needs of the public and private sector, one of which is the County Land Records website, and whereas they help provide a safe and efficient transportation system plan, obtaining transportation funding, which is maintained and funded partly through Wisconsin, Minnesota, and federally required Metropolitan Transportation Planning Department. Now, therefore, be it resolved, the La Crosse County Board does hereby proclaim the month of December 2011 as Zoning, Planning, and Land Information and Metropolitan Transportation Planning Month, and urges all residents to join in recognizing the valuable contributions of the staff dedicated to promoting the public health, safety, and a property tax base through encouraged, planned, and orderly land use development.
Moved by Supervisor Pedretti, seconded by Supervisor Meyer. Any discussion on the proclamation? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. That is approved unanimously.
Madam Chair, the only other item, of course, is on your desk is planning for the retirement party for the gentleman to my right, Bill Shepherd. We're going to miss him, but we are going to send him off with some goodwill and probably a little good-natured ribbing. So that's Friday, January 6th, and well-deserved, I think. Friday, January 6th, 2012, there's a green sheet. Please make the time and the end of an era and the start of a new one. So we're going to miss Bill, but please try to make it Friday, January 6th.
And unfortunately, I'd like for there to be a motion in order on voting on whether or not Bill leaves, but that I don't think would be in order at this point.
You're
so
already appointed Dave.
keep both of them around. All right, sign ordinance update. Charlie, are you taking the... Charlie and Dave, it looks like, are taking the lead on this. And a reminder that the public hearing... Is it public hearing, public informational meeting? Monday, October 12th on the sign ordinance at the Omni Center at 6 o'clock. Did I say October? Wow. I wonder what that means. Okay, December 12th at the Omni Center in Banquet Hall number 4, beginning at 6 o'clock. I'm stalling for Charlie while he's... Okay. Unless you want to get Jeff down here.
go ahead with the PowerPoint. We killed a few trees today, as you can see on your desk.
Is that better? So there's a number of handouts that are in front of you. I'm going to start with the PowerPoint. For the sign ordinance. And so that looks like this. Okay. As part of the drafting of the zoning ordinance, which we'll get to in the second agenda item, the staff began drafting the zoning ordinance which included a portion for signs in roughly 08, but the sign portion really became an emphasis of the draft for us starting in January of 09. And as part of that drafting, then we took those that single ordinance out to get input from our towns, because our special relationship that we have with our towns in countywide zoning. So we met with those towns through probably February of 2011, and we had a proposal then put together within the zoning ordinance for signs to be regulated in March of 2011. At that point in time, there was interest in that ordinance and what that ordinance said, but with the installation of the LED billboard on the Monaghan overhead in April of 2011, that interest, I would say, took a different level. And the next month, then, the county adopted a moratorium on LED signs and billboards, and the drafting of a standalone ordinance that would have been removed from the sign ordinance began in earnest. And so through the process, then the PR&D committee took on that drafting starting approximately September of this year. And so then you see the dates that the PR&D committee met after that point, September 21st, October 5th, October 31st, and November 28th. Now that also includes their regular schedule, so understand the type of workload this added up for the Planning, Resources, and Development Committee, and you know, the effort that they put into drafting this proposal that's in front of you. And also through that process, then the moratorium was extended until February of 2012. Next slide, please. So the question really is, do we need a sign ordinance in La Crosse County? And as a staff, obviously, we felt we did need a sign ordinance because we had drafted it into the zoning ordinance. Next slide. So this gives you an idea that not only in the city of La Crosse, but also in the towns, we have areas where there are a significant number of signs. They were previously and continue to be regulated by the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, and we currently do not regulate signs as a sign ordinance. We do have a requirement for them to come in and get a permit for a detached accessory structure. Next slide. So this is a picture of the slide that really started this debate. This is the LED billboard on the Monaghan overhead. The main reason for this slide is we're going to start to give you examples of what different types of signs are. This is an off-premise sign. It's also an LED or an electronic sign or billboard. Next slide. This is an off-premise sign. If you can see it, it says Maple Grove Country Club, and it's got an arrow. It's also a directional sign. So that's a very important language in the ordinance as we get to it. Next slide. So then you have the difference between a monument sign and a pole sign. You can see the monument sign is basically affixed to the ground with a foundation or footing, and a pole sign is affixed to the ground with poles. Next. On the upper left is a subdivision sign. Very nice. They give people a sense of place in their subdivisions, etc. And then on the bottom is a wall sign. Fairly simple technology, fairly simple terminology, but that's what the ordinance is based on. Up on the premises, on the wall. Next slide. So it gives you a little bit of a view of the unique process for drafting this ordinance. Typically, you'll have staff with the assistance of their committee draft the ordinance. In this process, the PR&D committee started in September and reviewed a couple of drafts that were submitted to them by county board members. They combined those drafts into their own draft, which is the committee proposal. It's also the public hearing draft of the sign ordinance at this point, and that's what we'll be focusing our efforts on tonight. Next slide. So most of the typical signs that you'll see in this ordinance and the presentation that's in front of you that'll help you a little bit with this is the matrix. Now, this doesn't give you all the details in the ordinance. That's why it's a kind of an executive summary. But it gives you a little bit of direction as to how each sign is regulated within the ordinance. If you want all the details, read the ordinance. So most signs, the maximum height of typical signs is 20 feet. The maximum square footage in the residential district is 32. In the agricultural district is 64, and in the commercial district is 200. Now, there's some exceptions to those rules, but that's fairly typical. The sign allows 2 permitted signs per street frontage per parcel. Lighted signs might be allowed in all districts. Electronic signs and LED signs are only allowed in the ag district and then in the commercial and industrial districts, with a buffer from the residential district. Next slide. One of the questions was, how do we deal with existing non-conforming signs? And again, this is the grandfather clause that we talk about in most ordinances. So there are a lot of signs out there as of today. And some of those signs are going to become existing non-conforming because they will not comply with this ordinance if it's adopted. Those signs can remain, and they can be maintained for however long the company wants to maintain them. But if they want to improve them, then they would have to come into compliance. So, for example, a sign might be within a setback distance. Let's say it's within 25 feet or 10 feet. So that sign can be maintained where it's at. But if they want to improve it or change the materials or something like that, then they would have to comply with that setback requirement to bring it into compliance. There are a number of electronic signs out there that are easily reprogrammed. You can go into the sign itself. Many of them have programming capabilities from the computer at the business. If they can be reprogrammed easily, then they will need to be reprogrammed within 90 days if this ordinance is adopted in order to be in compliance with the ordinance. That's going to be a little bit of a tough thing for us to enforce, but the hope is that, you know, most of the people that know the programming and know what the programming does can change the programming fairly quickly and easily. Okay, next. Electronic billboards, obviously this is the piece of the ordinance that has received a significant amount of the attention and a significant amount of the work by the committee. These electronic billboards would be allowed if they are either 1,320 feet or 1,500 feet from an RPA district. What is an RPA district, you might ask? I'll give you two pieces that are in front of you. If you look at the matrix, you can see on the very top, it lumps the first two into RPA districts and the last one into non-RPA districts. Okay, and then there's a map in front of you that's mostly yellow of La Crosse County. The yellow are the RPA districts in La Crosse County, and the red are the non-RPA districts in La Crosse County. So basically, at this point in time, unless there's additional rezonings, the areas of red would be areas where commercial or industrial zoning exists and where new billboards of any type would be allowed, off-premise signs. So in these red districts, then there's a setback from the residential districts, the RPA districts, of either 1,320 feet on the interstate or 1,500 feet on all other highways.
Supervisor Ebert, you have a question?
Just for curiosity, what does RPA stand for?
Residential, public, or agricultural. That's a definition in the ordinance. Any new LED billboards would be limited to a conversion of an existing static billboard with approval at a public hearing. So there would be a public hearing before any new LED billboards would be able to be approved. The billboards must remove 2 square feet of existing sign face per every 1 square foot of new sign face that they're going to convert. And these new LED billboards can only happen in areas that have a minimum of 20,000 average daily trips per day. Traffic flow. Also, for the public hearing, there will be notice to residents within 1,000 feet. These are things within the proposed ordinance in front of you.
Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is a resident somebody with a house, or does it just mean that they own the property within 1,000 feet?
Typically, when we do a notice to that buffer distance, we do a notice to the landowner.
So it shouldn't really be residents. It should be landowners within 1,000 feet. Thank you.
Great. Next slide, please. Off-premise static billboards, these are not LED billboards. These are just the regular billboards, are permitted in commercial and industrial. There's a buffer distance for these billboards, 300 feet from the RPA district if they're non-illuminated or unlit, and 900 feet if they are illuminated. They need to be, any new sign needs to be set back 600 feet from another sign. They're allowed up to 300 square feet per side with two sign faces on the regular highways with a 30 feet in height requirement, and then 672 square feet per side, two sides, 50 feet height on the Interstate 90.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you. So, Charlie, then, all throughout this ordinance, buffer, the definition of buffer is distance?
Buffer is probably not a word that you'll find in the ordinance. It's a setback distance.
But that's what, if you see buffer in there, it refers to distance. It doesn't refer to anything else.
Yeah, buffer is just a word that I used in the PowerPoint. It's not a legal word that we use in the ordinance. It's a setback distance. So, yes, distance is correct. Next slide. So that's basically my presentation. One of the things also that was brought up to me that might be confusing is you see on the matrix the terms allowed, permitted, or prohibited. Basically, allowed means you can do it. Permitted means you can do it if you come in and get a permit from us. And prohibited means you can't do it. So try to keep it fairly simple, but it could be confusing because allowed and permitted in many circles means the same thing. But in our circles, allowed means you can do it. Permitted means you can do it if you come get a permit. Yeah, I definitely want the committee to have an opportunity to talk a little bit about their process and, you know, how you came to the proposal that's in front of everyone today.
Let's hear from the committee chair, Supervisor Meyer.
I really had a question first. The 1,000 feet, what is that? From anybody 1,000 feet from a sign that, what do you, for that's going to get a notice on a public hearing?
Yep, typically on a public hearing for a rezoning request, we have a 300-foot distance. In the sign ordinance, it's 1,000 foot for notification.
So you're going to go through the list of all the signs and hit?
Nope. The sign applicant will give us a point on the ground for the where that sign is going to go, and then we'll do a 1,000-foot circle around that point, and anybody who's a landowner within that 1,000-foot will get a notice of that public hearing.
Okay.
There are a couple of other questions. Do you want to talk about process now, or
well,
do you have the floor?
This meeting tonight was, I requested this of Steve O'Malley several months ago, and I thought we were really going to move along fast, but here we are. And I think it's important that the supervisors listen to what Charlie had to say and see where we're at. It's not done. There could be some definite changes after the public hearing. Some good ideas come in from the public, from the sign companies, from Maureen, whatever. We'll deal with those at a future meeting and maybe accept some of them and maybe not accept all of them. So that's kind of where we are at as a committee. We kid Jeff, he'll be long gone probably before we ever vote on this, but he's been a big part of it too, so that's kind of it.
Supervisor Path.
Thank you. What I was in the rural area then, where you have a state highway going right through the town. Example, there's in Mindoro and Farmington, you've got State Highway 108 goes north and south through the town. Do you have jurisdiction over the state highway then, or how is that? So that ordinance, what you're talking about, will affect the north-south direction of the state highway then also. not just a county highway. County highways go east and west through Bendoro.
The DOT has jurisdiction over all federal aid highways, and 108 is one of those. However, if we adopt this ordinance, then yes, we would have jurisdiction in the unincorporated areas of La Crosse County, with one exception, and I'll let Dave kind of explain that exception in the front of the ordinance with the towns adopting their own.
Evening. Just another point is that if you look at very early in the ordinance under 33.01 parent 3, one thing I want to point out is by statute, this ordinance will not apply in cities, villages, or towns that enact ordinances that govern the same subject matter. So in other words, if a town or a village adopts an ordinance regulating signs, that will govern rather than our ordinance. So that's an important point to know. I guess the other thing I wanted to point out is just so you know what the state regulation on these signs is. If we didn't do anything, what's the state regulations right now regarding billboards or electronic signs, off-premises signs? And I can tell you a little bit about that. And that is under 84.30, a Wisconsin statute, and they're pretty generous. For off-premises signs, the size of the sign can be up to 1,200 square feet. The distance between signs on interstate highways is they have to be 500 feet, and that's on federal aid highways and interstate highways. And if it's not a federal aid highway or an interstate highway, the distance is 300 feet. Now, that's for billboards, that's for static, that's for digital billboards, doesn't matter. So that's about it. And then for the electronic signs, the regulation is that each change of message shall be done in 1 second or less. Each message shall remain in a fixed position for at least 6 seconds, and traveling messages or segmented messages, whatever that means, they're prohibited. So those are the regulations, but other than that, there's not a lot of regulation in the area. So I just want to make sure you're aware that's what the regulation is if you don't do anything for off-premises signs, these billboards and the conversion to digital billboards. So I think that's helpful. The only other thing I wanted to point out is if you want to really look through this and you want to look at the meat of the ordinance, you look at page 8, which is the regulation for on-premise electronic signs. That's on parent 9. That regulates what you have, those electronic signs you see on-premises for things that could be Quick Trips, could be Carpet Country, you know, the smaller electronic signs you see on-premises. So those will regulate those types of signs. And then on pages 13 and 14, only in commercial or industrial districts, you see the regulations regarding off-premise static. That's your billboards. And then parent I is your digital billboards or electronic signs. That's for conversion to electronic signs. And you'll have 1 to 11 regulations in that area. So that's really the other regulations are important, but that's, I think, the guts of some of the changes that we're talking about.
Supervisor Paff, you still have the floor.
Yes, so to answer my question...
Is your mic on?
Can you hear me now? Okay. When you have an unincorporated town, then, such as Mindoro, it would be done by the town board, then, to make the ordinance for the state highway going through the center of town. Is that correct?
If they want to, they can. But if not, then we have jurisdiction there.
Okay.
Because it's in an unincorporated area of La Crosse County, this ordinance, if adopted, would give us jurisdiction in all 12 towns. If the town of Farmington wants to have their own sign ordinance, then we would not have jurisdiction. Their sign ordinance would preclude ours.
Supervisor Wood.
Thank you. Thank you. Mr. Handy, just to go back to some definitions, for the permitted, is permitted automatic upon application?
If they meet the minimum standards, yes, the permit would be issued upon application.
And is permitting subject to notification of landowners?
No. The only notification to landowners would happen in the public hearing process for an electronic billboard.
Okay, so then only electronic billboards would be subject to appeal.
No, that's not correct. There would be a possibility of appeal, right, Dave, of any of the permitted. The appeals process would go back to the Planning Resources and Development Committee, which is not something that's typical to us at this point. Typically, our appeals right now with the zoning ordinance go to the Board of Adjustment. But because this is not within the zoning ordinance, this appeals process goes back to the Planning Resources and Development Committee and can be appealed on the regulations within the ordinance.
Okay, so the relationship between the public hearing and the appeals process is what?
Well, the public hearing and the issuance of a permit after that could also be appealed. The appeal process is for the whole ordinance, not just for the public hearing. But the public hearing is, if you go through the public hearing process, the committee can either approve or deny based on those the content items of the application. And if they feel that the applicant's application is not worthy, then they will deny it. If they feel it's worthy, then they will approve it. That's what the public hearing process is for with that electronic digital billboard, and the standards are in the ordinance.
So if someone comes in with requesting a permit and no notification is given to the landowners as an automatic piece, at what point do the landowners get to ask that a permit not be given?
The point that they have is if they don't like that in the ordinance, they should come to the public hearing of the ordinance and request that that be changed. We issue permits for zoning, occupancy permits for buildings and et cetera. None of those are appealable by the neighbors. And the same goes here. The appeals process, or not the appeals process, I apologize, the conditional use process or public hearing process allows notification of the neighbors, and that's when they have an opportunity. And so the only notification in this ordinance is for the electronic digital billboards.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Yep.
Supervisor Geary.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Charlie, on this, where the red things are, they're only going to put a billboard or digital sign where there's a certain traffic count, or it wouldn't be viable, right?
Correct.
Are all those locations viable, or some of them look like they're kind of remote?
Just our zoning districts, Ralph.
Oh, just?
That's just our commercial, industrial.
Okay. So out of the ones that got heavy traffic counts, some of them red squares look pretty far away from the road.
That's right.
So they wouldn't be viable there either?
Probably not.
Okay, so there's very few anywhere in the county that could pass, right?
That's correct.
Okay, and then on this, this was handy, this the
thank
spreadsheet.
You.
But on the
huge compliment.
Huge compliment, yeah. the last one on the page one, repairs and maintenance to existing non-conforming signs. On one of them it says you can repair it up to 50%, and another one it says you can replace them. Well, if you repaired 50%, in 2 years you could you'd have a whole new one, wouldn't you?
We keep a lifetime record on I'm going to have Nate answer that question.
Thank you.
I'd like to introduce you to our interim director, Nathan Sampson.
Just to clarify, typically what we do with those 50% rules is that's a cumulative percentage that's weighed against the entire lifetime of that building or structure. So if an improvement or a repair, say if it was 25% of the assessed or appraised value of that structure, you've used up 25% to that point. Now in the future, if the assessment or appraisal of that structure is greater and you incur damage that has to be repaired, you'd have 25% of whatever that value would be in the future. So typically that 50% is tallied cumulatively over the lifetime.
I still don't quite get it. It gets hit with lightning. it's destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Can they put up the same thing they had before?
Yes.
Okay.
Within 90 days.
Within what?
Within 90 days.
Oh, okay. So they can replace something, but the way you got the repairs, wouldn't it get in disrepair after a while?
And that's typical, too, that through attrition by the elements and things like that, in an ideal world, these nonconformities will at some point be a conforming structure. And so...
You mean it'd be the same location with a different type of sign or a different size or different whatever?
No, if it's through just general deterioration, that's
one... You said nonconforming.
Yes.
Nonconforming means they're in a location now that wouldn't be allowed in the future. I mean, if...
Correct.
If they were applying for a permit for that location now, they couldn't get it, but since it's already there, they've got it.
That's right.
So it doesn't expire sometime in the future? They can keep it there? It's kind of grandfathered in forever?
If it's destroyed by an act of God, say a lightning bolt, as your example was.
Well, how about Charlie?
That could also be replaced.
So now you know my workload for the next No, I think what Nate's also saying is, you know, they can be in non-compliance for many different things.
Yeah.
It might be they're just a few square feet over the size. It might be they're closer in setback distance to another sign, et cetera, et cetera. So there's ways that they can come into compliance in many cases fairly easily. And so if through that attrition, through that wear and tear, the sign company decides, okay, instead of spending so much money to keep the maintenance up, let's just rebuild it in a new spot so it's in compliance, that's the ultimate goal, is to get all of those non-conforming signs eventually into compliance. But it's also so that they can keep that investment that they've made in place and continue to maintain that investment.
Okay, so in a nutshell, the areas we've got jurisdiction over, basically, there isn't going to be a lot of new signs because, according to this, I'm reading it, I'm trying to figure out where you could put one, and you can't, but they can just keep what they've got, where they've got it, but they've got to maintain it to a certain standard.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That is basically, okay.
Yep.
Supervisor Cruz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is, you indicated that the ordinance in its present form is a combination of two earlier ordinances. And would those have been the ordinances that you crafted with the towns in that two-year period when you were working with the towns? Have those been partially vetted? I'm assuming probably the electronic part of it wasn't part of that, but has everything else kind of been okayed through the towns or not?
The ordinance that we drafted has, I think, definitely played a role in drafting this ordinance, because you'll see many of the things are fairly similar. However, that's not the two ordinances that I was referring to in the slide. The two ordinances I was referring to in the slide was the Friedland proposal and the Ferries proposal. As far as being vetted through the towns, we have given the drafts to the towns, you know, as we've gone through. We haven't really had a specific meeting with the towns to talk about the sign ordinance. We're hoping that comes out next Monday at the public hearing. So,
and if I could add to that a little bit, the original draft that we had in the zoning ordinance, our initial draft, we did have the towns participate in that also quite extensively.
Thank you.
Nate, just for clarification, you're saying before the sign ordinance was pulled out...
Correct.
To become its own ordinance.
Yep, that's correct.
Up to that point.
Yes.
Okay. Is that it for you, Supervisor Cruz?
Thank you, yes.
Supervisor Billings.
Thank you. I think my question is for Dave Lang. I'm wondering about the Great River Road. Does the state have laws that about signs that govern that are... that over have more power than all other
You mean
ordinances?
Because it's a rustic road or the Great River Road along. I didn't when I'm talking to the state, they didn't mention anything there. It's something we can check into more, but they didn't mention any greater power over signs, but unless there may be a federal regulation over those areas. I don't know if Maureen found that one looking into it or not, but I didn't see any.
Yeah, I'd like you to research that if you could to see what rules govern that road. Thank okay. you.
We did discuss sensitive areas when we discussed the doing the ordinance, and we have regulations to restrict some of these signs in sensitive areas, such as floodways and that type of area. We're looking for more information regarding some of the rustic roads. We didn't get any back yet.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Is Jeff has a request into the DOT for more information on specifically that road because it is designated as a scenic byway. Federal,
right.
That's a federal designation.
Right. We'll continue to look into that.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, and it just I wasn't planning on talking about this, but as far as the scenic Great River Road and stuff, I know that there's some separate rules and regulations on that from DOT, because I know in the city of La Crosse, when Sloopy's was sold, Dave Berger was concerned that that was a changeable sign and that because it was on the Great River Road, he wouldn't be able to maintain it or something. So there are some separate rules, but okay. My question is really more on content. Is there anything in this ordinance regulating the content of what's on the boards?
No,
does anybody regulate that?
We don't, and we try very hard not to because we want to protect the citizens of La Crosse County from legal challenges. And the only difference in content is based on on-premise or off-premise. And so if it's an on-premise sign, they can have content related to the business on the premises. They cannot have content related to another business that's off-premise. It's an off-premise sign, then the content is less than regulated.
Well, my thinking was, you know, you drive down the interstate and you see these signs that says, you know, Gentleman's Club, XXX, next exit or something.
I've never seen anything like that.
Well, what if they put a sign like that, next to a church, on the property next to a church? You know, I mean, is it an area you don't want to go into because of First Amendment?
No, it's an area that we shouldn't go into because our Constitution doesn't allow us to. The Constitution allows free speech and that has been thoroughly vetted through case law, and
right.
We stay away from that content discussion.
Okay, but then nothing in this ordinance will do that. But you're not free speech is not unlimited, though, Charlie. You know that.
I know that. I'm not going to shout fire.
Yeah. So if there is an issue of content, it's between the sign company and the owner of the property. Correct. I mean,
that could be one example. Yes.
I mean, for example, but that is allowed on content. I mean, I could give you a perfect example, and you might laugh at it. But my dad used to have a gas station on the north side, and there was a billboard on that property, and he said you can put anything up there but advertising for Republicans, and they said okay, So, but that's content. And that was an agreement, but it was a side agreement between the owner of the property and the other. You know, maybe you don't like tobacco products advertised. So, I mean, but that's a side issue.
That's negotiated in the lease between the property owner and the sign company.
Supervisor Burns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question about digital LED signs. Provision number 11 talks about a trade ratio. So the purpose, the effect of this trade ratio is you're going to take a current billboard. Let's say a company wants to convert a regular billboard, illuminated billboard, into an LED digital sign. The effect of this provision would be to reduce it by 50%?
The effect would be, let's say they're going to use a number of 500 square feet. That's the size of the new conversion, okay? That means that they have to take 1,000 square feet of static billboard space down somewhere in La Crosse County at their choice.
Okay, so it doesn't have to be that sign.
Right. That sign forces 1,000 square feet somewhere else to be removed.
Okay, and with a company, just any company, or how does that work? Or how do you regulate that?
Well, it'd be a condition of their conditional use, or not conditional, it'd be a condition of their approval, of their permit approval, and so we would just wait until that's been done, that condition has been met, before we would issue the permit.
So you're under the assumption that that company has other signs? And what if a company wants to start, what if it's a new company that wants to start and put up a digital billboard and they don't have any other signs?
They'd have to purchase that square footage from a company that does.
Okay. So what's the intent of this?
I didn't draft it.
Could I ask, well, you didn't draft it, but
I can speculate on the intent of it. My speculation is that the drafters felt that there was too many square feet of billboard space in La Crosse County already, and this would allow the reduction of some of those square feet of billboard space. That's complete speculation on my part.
Okay, so it doesn't have anything to do with the fact that it's digital. It's just they're trying to eliminate billboards. Okay, thank you.
I think you'll get your answer in a minute. A couple speakers down the list. Supervisor Burns. Supervisor Ferries.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to comment on Supervisor Billings' question about the Great River Byway. And I know through Unalaska, and I'm thinking it's because it's a federal deal that there is a moratorium. I know that for a fact through Unalaska, and I assume it follows all the way through, that there's a moratorium on it, any signs that are going through. So, thank you. Thank you.
Supervisor Karen Johnson.
Back to Supervisor Geary's question about the maintenance. I just had a quick one. How do you document repairs that have taken place? Is that a permit process when someone makes a repair to a billboard or a off-premise or on-premise sign?
When estimating repairs, we'll actually have them come in with a materials list and labor costs so we can evaluate that.
Okay, so every time a repair takes place, that has
yes.
to happen.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Supervisor Weers.
Thank you. My comment is just in response to Supervisor Burns's comment that the conversion doesn't have anything to do with the fact that it's digital. And I would say the intent was, yes, it does, because on a digital sign, you can advertise up to, say, 8 businesses, probably average. And so that was the thought. If you can advertise that much more, and we already do have kind of an exorbitant number of billboards in La Crosse County, so it was in response to the number of businesses that are being able to be advertised.
Supervisor Meyer.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Charlie, we discussed the fact that that this was not going to be in the total zoning or the total zoning code. It's going to be separate. We also talked then about that the appeals process would be different. Can you split those out and explain why?
Well, because it's not in the zoning ordinance, it's not a zoning regulation. And the Board of Adjustment is a quasi-judicial body. And I'll let somebody smarter than me answer that question.
We just did because it's not a zoning ordinance, so you couldn't use the zoning board of adjustment. That would be confusing. And so I think what the committee said is we do want to have an appeal process.
Right.
So basically we're creating something new here.
Right.
We may have to polish that up. Just so everybody knows, this has been changed and changed, you know, a number of times, and even just before what you got here, there was some formatting from the zoning. So you're going to see some spelling or some things that aren't exactly right, but the appeal process, we may have to fine-tune that, too, because this is all pretty new.
Well, it's just that we have to have something, and that's right. We talked about fine-tuning. I didn't know if you got that far yet, but...
Just to have the jungle process of an appeal to the committee, and then I think we're going to have to think of, okay, then what's the standard? Is the standard going to be the same as, like, a board of adjustment, and we're going to have to deal with that.
Maybe Bill could clean it up before he leaves.
Yeah.
Supervisor Friedland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to say that I left one of the handouts on the desk, and what it is a comparison of the DOT regulations, the, shall we call it, the Friedland proposal, the Ferries proposal, and then where the PRD left it. And the purpose of that was to show you that there were a lot of compromises and there were a lot of there were some matters that fell a little more to one side or the other, but it gives you an idea of what the different points were that we were talking about. Although both Supervisor Ferries and myself actually based what we talked about on the zoning ordinance that came out last summer. So except for the electronic portions of it, most of the non-electronic portions are firmly based on what the zoning department itself did. The other thing that I wanted to say was that I really encourage everybody to come to the public hearing on Monday at 6 o'clock at the Omni Center. I do think that what happens with the sign ordinance can really affect the way the community looks, and even more than how it looks for a long time. So I do hope that everybody will try to make an effort to be there, please.
Supervisor Mock.
I've learned that our county is seventh in the state as far as how many billboards and signs we have. So we do have a lot. And Wisconsin is, where did I get this? We're fifth in the nation with the amount of billboards that we have. So Wisconsin seems to be billboard happy, but we do have a lot of billboards. I also want to say that before we have this question and answer period about the signs, I hope all of us will go home and read this a couple of times. It's not easy reading, but read the definitions and read about the different areas that are being talked about, whether it's residential or whether it's industrial, whether it's commercial, because there are different ideas of how big the sign should be. And get familiar with it so that if you do ask a question, it's worth your asking. And maybe you won't have to ask so many questions, but really promise those of us on the committee who have been working really hard with the staff. The staff has been tremendous in rewriting and changing and thinking about this, and everybody's worked really hard. And so I think as county supervisors, we got to do our paperwork and read it before Monday night. Thank you.
I have two speakers who wish to be heard for a second time. Supervisor Weers.
I just wanted to highlight and emphasize the importance of us, the committee, having the appeals process in there. I think Supervisor Burns brought up a good point when he said if a new company wanted to put up a billboard, would they have to then convert? I know Charlie said they would have to get another company to help them with that conversion. I don't think that sounds very realistic as a committee member. So that would be an instance maybe where an appeals process would come in. I don't think any of us thought that this was going to be a perfect ordinance the first time around. So I just want to emphasize that there are going to be cases that will have to be appealed and decided by the committee and the full board. So just keep that in mind also when we're going forward with this, that's a key part of this ordinance.
Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I heard you talk about an on-premise electronic, and you can't advertise something else. Would that include, like, a ham dinner at the American Legion or something? Because there's a lot of signs that do that, the public service stuff. And from what I heard you say, that would be prohibited. Is there a provision to allow nonprofits or something that folks can give up the, you know what I mean, Yeah, to use it for nonprofit, the Legion, the blah blah blah, whatever.
I don't think we have a provision in the ordinance for it. It sounds like a good provision, but we hadn't thought of that.
I guess I would ask the committee to look at something. I know in West Salem, the bank always has for the Legion has dinner or something like that. So I would guess I'd ask the committee if they could. Also, the Cross Sign always has stuff for
If you look at the provisions for the electronic digital billboards, which is off-premise signs, there is a requirement for a certain amount of public service portion of the signs, but we didn't address that in on-premise. So yeah, that's something we should take
a
look at.
I guess I would request that they would do that. Thank you.
Supervisor Paff has the last question.
This kind of goes back to my first question, and that's and you answered that the towns all supersede what you folks are doing. So when they get done, say the town of Madary or whatever makes their own ordinance, then what you have went through here, will it have any teeth or not? Or will or the townships, if they wish to, because all the villages and the city of La Crosse and the city of Onalaska have their own ordinances, and you only have jurisdictions over the outlying areas anyway, the townships. And if they make their own rules, this won't have any teeth?
That's correct.
Okay, thank you.
We don't have jurisdiction in the incorporated municipalities at all now. If this goes into effect, I know for sure that the town of Holland has a sign ordinance in place, so we won't have jurisdiction there. And any of the other towns that adopt their own sign ordinance, we would not have jurisdiction over their signs.
I want Supervisor Geary.
Now that you, Leon made it sound like they would be less restrictive, is the town of Holland's less restrictive or more restrictive than this?
It doesn't matter. If they adopt a sign ordinance.
Right, but it could be more restrictive.
It could be more, it could be less.
Yeah, it could be less. He implied it would be less, but it could be the other way, too.
My opinion on the town of Holland sign ordinance is not that it's more or less restrictive, but it is different and regulated in many different ways.
So I want to echo what Supervisor Friedland.
Oh, I'm sorry. I just wanted to say regarding the messages, it does say that on-premise shall be used to advertise activities conducted on the premise or to present public service information. So that would include the American Legion dinner sign.
We're smarter than I thought.
That provision I did write.
So now I want to echo what Supervisor Mock indicated a few minutes ago, and that is there's quite a volume of material that was presented this evening and that is on each of our desks, and I would encourage all of us to take the time to carefully review that. I would also encourage attendance Monday night, as has already been suggested, 6 o'clock at the Omni Center. The plan is that the sign ordinance will come through the committee process in January and then second reading in February, so we hit that completion date of the extended moratorium period. And we will have opportunity at the first reading, at the second reading, to debate the merits of the ordinance. So there's still work to be done, including on the part of the full county board, and I encourage your participation in that. Supervisor Ebert.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm wondering if we're looking at offsetting the zoning and the signs so that we're not doing first readings and second readings on the same, because that was originally thought, and that seems
I think that's a perfect pivot to the zoning ordinance discussion. Thank you.
Thank you.
I owe you for that one. I'm sure you will. I think the intent is that the zoning ordinance is going to come through December and January. Sign ordinance will be January and February. So with that, let's transition. Supervisor Meyer.
Can we just walk through the process of the public hearing on Monday night? It's informational, I understand. But the question I have is, are you going to answer the questions as they're posed from the audience, or are you going to, like one time you just gathered them up and you spoke to the group afterwards? What would be the way you're going to proceed with this?
Well, I think we'll give a little bit of a presentation to begin with to try to educate the crowd on the process and what we've done and what's in the ordinance. And then we'll take comments, public comments. Through those public comments, there'll probably be a few questions that pop up that'll be obvious that we should answer either then or maybe the question is something that we expect to come back a couple more times, and we'll answer those at the end. But if there's a question that pops up that we think we can answer quickly that will help the public informational meeting flow, we'll try to answer it quickly. But I think if there's a more difficult, complicated question, we'll take it and we'll answer it at the end of the public comments so that we can have a little bit of time to assess. I also will say that we'll collect written comments, email comments, phone comments for the next month. We'll take all of those comments back to the committee meeting in January, and then the committee will make minor adjustments or major adjustments, if you will, to this sign ordinance at their committee meeting in January, and then bring that back to the full county board if we feel we're ready at the probably January county board meeting for the first reading.
That's sort of how you did it the last zoning one. You took some on the fly, answered them, so it's going to be the same.
Yep.
However you feel you can do it.
We're going to try.
I'm sure you will. I've gotten a lot of emails, and I've recommended that everybody, if they have a change, they should put it in writing and try and give it to you or somebody there. So thank you, Charlie.
Supervisor Mock.
He has something that has dark marks going through it on the ordinance. And that means it's been crossed through and it's no longer in existence.
That's a good point. If you're looking at the ordinance, and both of these ordinances are the same, okay?
When you're saying both, you're saying the sign ordinance and the
zoning ordinance, which we need to get to.
Yes,
but
we do.
The sign ordinance and the zoning ordinance, this is how we typically do our drafting. If it's highlighted, it's gone. It's deleted. If it's underlined, it's new, okay? That's the basics of it. If it's neither, it's been there for a while.
So let's, Supervisor Schrader.
No, I was just wondering how important it is that you stick to this schedule to get this through the process, because it sounds like there may be a lot of things that are maybe be discussed in the committee before it comes time to, you know, to act on this. Would it hurt anything if these were stretched out to March or?
Well, February is the end of the extended moratorium on the sign ordinance, so we would have to, the full county board would have to extend the moratorium a second time to deal with the sign ordinance beyond our February cycle, or suspend the rules and take first and second reading in February. Those are the two ways that we could change it on the sign ordinance. On the zoning ordinance, we have a draft of the, that's what Charlie's going to go through next, to do December 1st reading, January 2nd reading. And if we can start on that discussion, I think we'll gain a sense of how close to the mark we are on the zoning ordinance. So with that, I'm going to pivot back to you, Charlie, to move us on zoning.
Okay. If you could bring up the PowerPoint for the zoning ordinance. You'll notice that my PowerPoints aren't quite as flowery as Mr. O'Malley's.
Or as long.
My apologies. Why should we redo the zoning ordinance? And this is called a comprehensive rewrite per state statutes. We're changing districts, we're adding districts, we're changing names of districts. So it's a comprehensive rewrite. The reason we should do a comprehensive rewrite of the zoning ordinance, one, we adopted a new comprehensive plan in 2008. We are in the process of adopting a new farmland preservation plan. It's adopted by committee and should be coming to full county board fairly soon. There's also new state statutes as far as comprehensive planning and farmland preservation that have an effect on a certified farmland preservation zoning ordinance, which is what this ordinance will be if we adopt it. And the last update was done in 1980, so it's just a couple years old. The staff and committee have experienced some issues with the current ordinance over the past 30 years. It's obviously a pretty good ordinance because we didn't change it significantly. But some of those issues that we've experienced over the past 30 years we're trying to address in this ordinance. Also, the state statutes have addressed some of the concerns they've seen. Next slide, please. Here's the timetable. We started drafting in earnest the day after you adopted the comp plan. But really, the first presentation to the committee was done in January of 2009.
Through that process, we've also met more than 50 times with our towns and other stakeholders that are integral in our enforcement and administration of the zoning ordinance. In March, we proposed a draft. In April, the PR&D committee supported that draft and rolling it out for public uptake. We presented this same presentation or similar presentation to you in June at the county policy planning meeting. Since June, we've had a number of public informational meetings that have had an effect on the drafting of this ordinance, and we'll talk about those limited areas of changes but significant content changes in the ordinance. So we had three public hearings or public informational meetings, if you will, in September. Those revisions from those meetings were approved by committee on October 28th. We are on October 31st. We had an additional public hearing on the 28th because of the significant changes we were talking about. We brought additional comments back to the committee on November 28th, which is very recently, and the committee approved some additional revisions to the ordinance on the 28th. And here we are with the presentation to you. If you look at your PowerPoint that's printed, it says December 12th. That's a mistake. The date that it comes to you possibly for first reading is December 15th. That's what we're proposing. Next slide, please. We received a number of comments on the very first issue. That was the most significant discussion that we had through the process, was the number of animal units allowed in the rural district. That's a change from rural residential to rural. So if I have rural residential anywhere on any of these documents, it's wrong. It's called rural now. And that's going to be the fourth district down on the matrix, this colored matrix. The fourth district down in yellow is called the rural district, not rural residential. We had a provision, a table for a maximum number of animal units per acre in that district based on our conservation department standards. That number was changed at the September round of meetings to 1,000 pounds per acre. And on the 28th of November, we removed any reference to animal units in the rural district. So that's a significant change in administration of the ordinance and drafting of the ordinance, but it didn't take much as far as change in the ordinance. It only took a few words changes. So that's the one big change that we will show you. Another area of debate was, should we have a conditional use permit for an increase of more than 200 animal units? And that's what's in our current ordinance. That's nothing new. That's what we have. State siting regulations, the number's 500. And if we changed, we would have to comply with the state's requirement of 500 animal units. That discussion was not approved by the committee, so it remains as is in our current ordinance. The third bullet there, reducing the loopholes that allow numerous residential facilities in the farmland preservation zoning districts, that came to us from the state through the farmland preservation certification program. One of the issues, if you saw the slide before, I talked about starting in 2008 and we're here at December of 2011. One of the things we continue to hear from detractors of this ordinance is that we're moving too fast. I guess I don't have any comment to that. We are proposing not to require a permit for detached accessory structures. We do require permits for them now in our current zoning ordinance, but we had a number of calls from people who put up Rubbermaid containers, structures of 16 square feet, 30 square feet, 50 square feet, and they had to get a permit too. And we thought that was a little bit ridiculous. They could, you know, have a small building that they could move with one person or two people, you know, so what if they put it in the wrong place? They could go out tomorrow and move it, you know, in 10 minutes. Why do we need a permit on that? So we proposed 64 square feet. There continues to be some consideration of how many square feet that should be. The committee has approved that number to be 100 square feet. Anything less than 100 square feet does not require a permit. That is one of the areas that, as a staff, we've seen significant issue with over the years, building of garages and detached accessory structures in drainage easements and access easements and on the right of way, and, you know, in areas where they just shouldn't go. We don't require a permit now for for agricultural buildings, and we don't get very many agricultural buildings you know, built every year, but we're proposing to continue that practice of not requiring a building permit for a solely ag building, but we do have a certification that we're proposing, and that has passed. So these are the issues. I'm not going through the whole ordinance because you've seen it before. These are the issues that we really addressed through the public hearing process. Next slide, please. This is the same as what you'll see in this matrix. What are the differences? We started with 12 units. We're going to end with 12 units if this is approved. Basically, we have two commercial districts right now, commercial A and commercial B. We have very limited acreage of commercial A because everybody wants either commercial B or commercial C. So we're just combining commercial A and B into one district because of the lack of demand. Secondly, we're adding a district in the bottom called public facilities and institutional. It's just a choice so that town halls, parks, things like that can have a district that shows up on the map as blue. It's very obvious where those public facilities might be, and they're regulated the same as they are in the current ordinance, only they're tucked into other districts currently. So that's the proposal in front of you for the zoning ordinance. Next slide. Animal units, we can talk more about that if you want, but I think the idea is, as we heard loud and clear, people didn't want it regulated within the zoning ordinance, so we aren't gonna. We're gonna continue to regulate that with our conservation department. Residential density, again, the state will limit that to five homes per farm, up to five homes per farm. We added in our ordinance the flexibility to change that to a 3% development of the farm. So that's in addition to what the state requires. We'll see if we can get certified with that additional flexibility. Next slide. That's it. So questions.
Supervisor Schrader.
Thank you, Charlie. If I was hearing this right when you were speaking about the number of animal units in what district was it now?
It's currently the Ag A district. Okay. It would be the new rural district.
Okay, the new rural district. You said that it would be 1,000 pounds per acre. Did you say that?
That was the second draft, 1,000 pounds per acre.
So you'd have to have 2 acres for a horse or?
Well, the table actually considers a horse as 1,000 pounds.
But is it still enough?
We're going to round up, if you will. We're not going to force them to cut a horse in half.
Right. It's no longer in the ordinance.
That's correct.
That was in the second draft, and it is removed. Other questions? Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was reading through this. I went through it pretty thoroughly. I had a question in regard to on page 10. It says planned unit development. In section F, agricultural uses shall not be allowed with approved subdivision plats. It looks to me like if somebody gets a subdivision plat approved and he isn't filling that space up real quickly, like the ridge up here on 33, they are cutting hay on there. And you say, are you saying with this that you can't cut the hay off of that, off of those plots that are not built on yet?
That provision is in our current zoning ordinance. That's not new to this zoning ordinance. So if they continue the agricultural use that was there, they can continue it.
They can continue.
But if they discontinue for a period of more than 12 months, then they cannot.
Yeah, it's basically a non-conforming use, so if they continue that, it's fine. Once they develop residential, there's no going back.
Well, you see, there's a state law, I think, that says that if you don't develop that lot and you keep it in ag, even though you've got a plot there, they can pay a lot less taxes on that than they do if it's developed already. So the developer has an interest in that because he is paying a lot less taxes on that undeveloped lot.
That's a Department of Revenue issue. We should really stick with the zoning.
I would agree, but the two fit hand in hand.
Yep.
But they can harvest something off of it
if they continue.
Okay.
Supervisor Spiker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. John, I think I asked you this question before, but I forgot your answer.
Me too.
Annexation, exactly. They have a comprehensive plan for, like, say, the Village of Homer or something. They annex a bunch of other land, and we have really no say in that, we being the county.
If they annex the land, they can do one of two things. They can continue to enforce our zoning ordinance on that land, the village can, or they can apply their own zoning ordinance if they apply a specific zoning district to it. So once it's annexed, you're correct, we do not have jurisdiction, but they can continue to use our ordinance if they want to administer it.
Their option.
Is that correct?
Yes, they continue to apply our regulations in that district. So if a piece was exclusive ag, it was annexed into the village, they would apply our exclusive ag regulations under that use district.
They could, but they don't have to.
No, they would be required to until they changed that zoning district to one that's recognized within their own ordinance.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. Supervisor Billings.
Thank you. Charlie, you said you were going to add the old commercial A and commercial B together. What was the difference between commercial A and commercial B in the old ordinance?
There's a couple of minor setback requirements, and then the uses allowed are more restrictive in commercial A. Commercial B is obviously less restrictive. I don't know the exact uses. I don't have the old zoning ordinance in front of me, but they're very minor in changes. It's
so where could I find that? Could I find that?
In Chapter 17, if you go on the website or come to our office and read the current Chapter 17, you can find commercial A. It's really a non-issue because there's I think there's somewhere around 5 acres of commercial A in the county that has more than 300,000 acres.
Thank you.
Supervisor Mettinger.
Yeah, I know a lot of people have put a lot of time and effort into this, and I commend you, but maybe this is something you talked about. Is there any historic zoning districts? I mean, there's certainly in the towns there's a lot of historic buildings and stuff and things you want to preserve, and I think I'm pretty sure that a lot of people have historic zoning things.
The Historic Sites Commission is looking at drafting a historic sites ordinance so that we would have some areas potentially. That's not something that we have in the zoning ordinance.
Is the Historic Sites Commission a pretty active organization? I mean, they're actively pursuing something now?
Mm-hmm. They report to our Planning Resources and Development Committee, and so our Planning Resource and Development Committee gets a report from their monthly meeting and also then regular reports on the activities that they're undertaking.
Think sometime in the next few months might be something forthcoming on historic preservation?
Probably not the next few months. They might have something coming forward to us, but I don't think we're going to be able to deal with it in the next few months.
Mr. Shepard also has some more information. Mr. Mettinger.
In the past, when that Historic Sites Committee has designated a site, the county board has passed a resolution and identifies the exact legal description. So it is recorded with the Register of Deeds. That was something that we started doing a few years ago. I don't remember exactly when. That, you know, because we were concerned that if they were too general in the description, it could encompass properties that were not or had not asked for that sort of designation. So it we need a specific legal description for such a designation.
Supervisor Mock, do you want to add to that?
This past year, I believe it was the Stripe School and the middle school that were designated historic sites. And 2 years ago, we had two other historic sites. We are trying to have an ordinance written that gives us a little more teeth, and it's tough to come up with something that we can't enforce, but we still want something that we've lost a town hall a few years ago that was a historic site. And so we try to, when we nominate a site and it gets passed, we try to instill upon the people how important this is to continue to see that it's kept in shape and that it's valuable. And we are giving plaques now that they can hang inside, outside, wherever, to give them a feeling of this is a very important thing to cherish. And people are excited about it, the ones who get nominated and fill out the form and are accepted. So we're working on it.
Yeah, we're going to try to address it, but not in the zoning ordinance.
But and we can also loop this information back. I mean, the same way historic sites reports to PR&D comes to here, we can certainly take Supervisor Mettinger's comments and let them know that there's interest from the board on this issue. Supervisor Wood.
Thank you. Charlie, in here I see phrases like fish farming and egg production and feedlots for 200 animals. Where would I, or feedlots when there are more than 200 animal units? Could you point me to where there's more talked about this as opposed to just having it like item B, item C, item D? And I'm especially interested to see what we're saying, if anything, about concentrated animal feedlots, be it pigs, horses.
We're not changing
chickens.
That language in the ordinance. We're keeping it the same. So if an existing agricultural facility increases their operation by more than 20% or more than 200 animal units, they're required to come and get a conditional use permit from us. And that is, if you look in the exclusive ag district, thank you, Don. Actually, it's on page 23 of the draft that I laid on your desk today. Conditional uses. I'm sorry, even further. Page 24, top of page 24, number 2, agricultural. These are agricultural uses that would require a conditional use permit. Feedlots when more than 200 animal units. Poultry operations when more than 10,000 birds. Those all require conditional use permits as an agricultural use in the exclusive ag district. Where's the 20%? Go ahead.
Supervisor Wood, were you asking for definitions?
Well, that would be my second follow-up.
If I could maybe address that, in Wisconsin Administrative Code ADCAP 51, that's the Livestock Facility Siting Administrative Code, that code requires a conditional use permit if, and this is a statewide ordinance, if a producer would plan to increase the animal unit numbers beyond 500 and higher than 20% of a level that he had there on May 1st of 2006. So first of all, he'd have to meet both of those conditions. Now, there's an exemption to that 500 animal unit number if a local unit of government had a lower number in there in 1996, which La Crosse County did. We had the 200 animal unit number. So that's where the difference between that 200 and 500 animal unit numbers comes about.
Okay, so at this point, if someone wanted to come in and, you know, establish a large pig farm, they would have to come before zoning and ask for a conditional use permit. And at that point, are people notified before conditional use permits are granted as well?
They are. But if the application for conditional use is deemed complete by the Land Conservation Department, the PR&D committee is required to make a recommendation of approval of that conditional use permit.
the committee is required to say okay.
Yes.
If they meet the state standards.
If they meet the state standards.
Which then flips to that 500 number?
No, because we have a more restrictive number, and we're authorized to by code, by administrative code.
And then is there a public hearing in all those processes as well?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. My reference was inaccurate, which is not a surprise to you all. Page 26 on the top, number 2 is expansion. Conditional use permit is required for the expansion, and that's where the 200 animal units and the 20% numbers come from.
Thank you. And that's what I was looking for. Thanks.
Supervisor Paff.
Thank you. Let's see, I was working on this. Just to say. Oh, the question was, if in your first, why redo zoning ordinance? Explain to me what the new farmland preservation plan is, because if you're zoned exclusive ag, it's a state program, and how can you change a state program? That's a farmland preservation plan.
I can't change a state program. The state changed its programs. The state adopted in the 2009 budget the Working Lands Initiative, which changed farmland preservation in Chapter 91 of the state statutes, which then changes the requirements for a certified farmland preservation zoning ordinance, which forces us by January 1st, 2013 to have a new farmland state-certified farmland preservation zoning ordinance. That's our attempt with this draft of the ordinance, is to comply with those state statute standards.
So then if any townships are already in exclusive ag, are eligible for any of the farmland preservation programs, correct?
Their eligibility continues through January 1st, 2013. If we do not get certified by DATCAP by then the eligibility lapses. If we do get certified, then their eligibility continues.
And when you say get certified, does a county have to survey it, or does each township have to certified?
Our ordinance needs to be certified. So we send our ordinance to DATCAP. They take a look at it, see if it meets the state standards, and then they certify it.
All righty.
Supervisor Doyle.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to follow up comments that were made earlier about the tremendous effort that the committee did, and I want to commend them for the hard work that they did and the numerous hearings and so forth, but I also want, and along with our staff, but I want to single out two people additionally, and that is our chair and Charlie Handy. I was at the meeting out at the fairgrounds, and it dealt with the issue of livestock and animal units and horses and so forth, and that crowd initially was incredibly hostile. They were not believing that we were going to do anything that they would like at all. And when we finished that meeting, thanks to the work of our chair and Charlie, they clapped. I was very impressed that they walked out of there thinking government had done something good for them, and I think that's really how this process should work. So thank you all for your efforts.
Thank you, Supervisor Doyle. Supervisor Hampson.
Thank you. I just want to go back to that conditional use permit for a CAFO where PRD is required to recommend approval. The county board can then deny approval. No?
The state siting legislation allows you a couple of areas that you can cite for denial. And that is health, safety, and welfare. And you have to actually physically prove that there's a threat for those. Is that it?
Yes.
That's it. So that's the only reason you can deny is if you have some sort of physical proof that says that this is going to threaten the health, safety, or welfare of your residents. And that is a very strict standard for denying it. So our opinion as staff is there's going to be very, very limited circumstances where you're going to be able to prove that. Mm-hmm. And so in most of the cases, if they meet the standards, their conditional use permit should be approved.
So even though I object to CAFOs, the county board has to pass that? I'll still vote no.
Really? Can I consistency is important.
Yeah, point of clarification.
Supervisor Mettinger.
you can. It has to be health, safety, and welfare of residents, not any damage to the environment. That's.
I don't have the statute in front of me, and I apologize. If you want to call me tomorrow, I can read you the very specific terminology.
That's not some environmental degradation if you're going to screw up a trout stream or something.
But the concept is there has to be some. You probably have to hire an engineering firm that's going to come up with a, you know. A
Supervisor Meyer.
Well, you must have read my mind. Thank you, Madam Chair. I only remember one of those in the last few years where Bill Shepard talked to us and said we had to approve it, so we did.
Shallard, town of Onalaska.
Twice for Peterson.
Peterson, town of Burns.
Supervisor Bina.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And the reason for that is the fact that the state didn't want to see farmers run out of business because there is going to be a lack of food at some point in time. Farmland preservation has changed considerably. 2 or 3 years ago, when the new requirements were there or put in, they took the income factor out of the thing and they put in some new requirements, which if you were in farmland preservation before, you better check to see whether you qualify. You have to have a conservation plan and a nutrient management plan now if you have animals at all. There are new requirements, but anybody in exclusive ag still has the right to get in and get your $7.50 credit per acre on your land. The one problem I have with I have more than one problem with the 200 animal units, and I'm not going to get into that. Part of the problem I have is that when we have a 200 animal units in La Crosse County, like we do, it becomes a problem of that farmer who's exceeding it, and because he's over 200 animal units in one way, shape, or form, there's a fine and a conditional use required. The problem is the Land Conservation Department then recommends he go to an outside agency for his help getting into compliance with our 200 animal units. And when that happens, there's a cost factor that goes along with it, and that cost factor can be anywhere from $6,000 to $10,000 extra. And that's why farmers, we don't have a lot of money in our pocket out here in the farming community. And in some cases, it may drive a farmer out of business, and I don't want to see that happen. We're trying to protect farmland, and we're trying to protect agriculture, because by 2030, we're going to have a food shortage in this world today, and we can't afford to lose any more farmers than we have.
Any other comments on the zoning ordinance rewrite? Supervisor Burns.
I have a question, actually. Are cemeteries regulated in this ordinance?
Yes.
Where are they at exactly? Which
cemeteries are going to be allowed in the rural district and in the public district?
I want to take a moment to publicly thank Planning Resources and Development Committee and staff. It has been a long several months. You have done yeoman's work, and from the chair, I want to say thank you for that work to Supervisors Meyer, Pedretti, Weirs, Kyle, Manti, Bina, and Mock for excellent work. You have kept yourselves busy, and you have presented to us ordinances that are worthy of our consideration and have been led by Supervisor Meyer and Vice Chair Pedretti through that work. And I also want to acknowledge the staff, and you guys have been short-staffed, and you've had a lot of transitions up in the zoning office, and you have plowed on and done great work. So thank you for that. We have public hearing on the sign ordinance. I'm sorry, I also want to acknowledge the work of Supervisors Ferry and Friedland for the work that you did on sign ordinance to get us to this point. Please remember to be in attendance Monday evening up at the Omni Center at 6 o'clock. Quick check to see if we have any agenda items for future meetings. If not, I will entertain a motion to adjourn by Supervisor Brockmiller, seconded by Supervisor Manti. All those in favor of adjournment signify by saying aye. Opposed, no. We are adjourned and